big thing. They got to do 100 of them 3 days a week.
Listen to our old podcast.
Yeah.
Listen to the one big thing. Okay, guys. Welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. I'm Ben Alderman.
And I'm Blair Morrison. We're sitting here at Iron Mile Studios.
Familiar territory lately.
That's right. The coffee shop, as some are calling it. And we're kind of in a little bit of a dead period now. We're waiting for regional announcements to come back. People have sent in video submissions post-open. People are kind of validating their training logs for the teams to make sure that they've been, you know, at their home gym more than half of the time, kind of just to protect against the super team deal. And there hasn't been a lot of action other than that because it's all waiting to come back.
Yeah, it seems like it. And I feel like there's this funny, you know, because there's always been, like, they want to see good reps on video. No bro reps, right?
No bro reps.
Yeah, but now there's this third category of Invictus reps.
Ooh.
So they're trying to figure out how to judge all these videos accurately.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know. Poor CJ. I'm sure he's just getting it from all sides right now.
I know.
Now.
And the reality is, I think you both of us know CJ. He's a good dude, and he runs a good gym, solid programming. Yeah. I've learned a lot from it. But I think all of us are just having a little bit of fun with, you know, what we thought was on Josh's workout. We know he's got a great engine. We talked about this. Just the reps didn't look up to par.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's the thing about video is it doesn't lie. And, I mean, there's just probably just need to be a little bit tighter on the standards. And, like, probably it's not going to make any difference for Josh. He's moving an inch extra every deadlift. It's not going to make a big difference. But, yeah, it tells you even the best need coaching, need eyes on them, need a little bit of, you know, reinforcement there.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because I think as affiliate owners and as the better or best athlete in our respective gyms, even us, we don't get coached a lot, right? Our range of motion standards, maybe we're going through a Cindy workout and our air squats are a little high. I don't really get called out for that very often. And so
right, people are scared to challenge you.
Yeah, right? They don't want to say anything, you know? And but I've kind of started training my coaching staff and the athletes around me like, hey, I have a tendency to be high on my air squat and it's not on purpose. So if you see me being high on my air squat, just say, Ben, get a little lower. And I'm not going to get mad.
Right.
If I'm in the middle of a 20-minute workout, I'm not going to come over and fight you, you know? And if I did, I probably wouldn't be good for very much anyway because I'm in the middle of Cindy.
Yeah. That's a real thing, man. I mean, I always ask our other coaches, hey, was my depth okay? Or, you know, on things like thrusters or whatever, just to make sure. But I remember there was a big deal at regionals a couple years ago with Neil Maddox. I mean, not locking out muscle ups or dips or things like that. And, like, you could tell the judges were scared to call him on it because
right.
He's such a, you know, well-known athlete, such a big deal. And, like, the stands were booing him.
Right.
Do you remember that? Like, he was getting straight up booed at the regional because, you know, the reps weren't legit to the standards of everybody else there.
Right.
But it's, you know, I think it takes some time for people to get comfortable calling out, like you said, athletes that are the best at their respective gym or even in, you know, your respective region.
Right. Like, how tough of a job do you have if you're no repping Rich Froning?
Oh,
right.
I know.
And everybody wants him to win. You know, everybody right. wants the guy to win. And they're like, oh, he's going against the, you know, maybe the dark horse, like a Matt Frazier or something like that. And then all of a sudden you're like, Rich, that was, excuse me, Mr. Froning.
Yeah.
can you do that rep one more time? Just make it a little more obvious for me, please.
Right.
You know, you don't want that job.
Right. I remember it happened this year at Wadapalooza to him, right? He got no repped on a rope climb or something like that. And the stand's like, oh, and they're trying to, like, get on the judge, even though it was legitimate, you know. And I don't think Rich complained at all. But that's tough, man. That's another reason why that is not an enviable position. Like, that's why they have the video submissions so that, you know, you can take some of the pressure off of, you know, your judges in your gym. And at regionals, obviously, you have people that are not paid to do it, but they've been doing it year after year after year, and it's hard.
I know. And then they have a tough job too because they're judging, and maybe they want to uphold a certain standard, but then they look around, the other judges aren't upholding the same standard, right?
So that's the worst.
That's the worst because, it, like you said, 3 years ago when Neil's getting booed on the burpee ring muscle up, right? He, you know, his judge isn't no repping them, but maybe he looked over and saw another judge also not no repping when the arm wasn't fully locked out.
Right.
And Neil saw a weak spot and just said, you know what? I'm just going to get a little pump here at the top and call it good.
Well, as an athlete, you know, in every sport, they're like, you know, a foul's not a foul unless the guy blows the whistle.
Right.
So they're going to push the envelope to whatever that the limit is, right? And you don't want to call it like straight up cheating, but it's like, hey, I'm going to go within the parameters that you set for me because I got a lot of other things to worry about in this workout without having to decide if I made it that last inch of extension. So,
right.
You know, in Josh's case, he's going to keep doing the deadlifts like he's doing them until somebody tells him that, oh, you got to get up higher.
Yeah, exactly. And I wouldn't want to be in CJ's position and no rep Josh.
No.
You know what I mean? That's not really my favorite thing to do either. You know, no. here's my boy. I don't want to no rep him on these deadlifts because I know he's working hard anyway.
Right. And I know he can do it.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe this is legit. Maybe his shoulder by
the same. Maybe my angle is just a little off.
Yeah.
I can't quite. It's just happening so fast.
Because you know they didn't look the same from where CJ was standing as what we saw in the video, right? It's like
right.
They probably looked a little bit closer, right? So right. CJ's like, hey, we're riding this line, which you always want to do as a competitor.
Yeah.
But
give the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, that wide-angle GoPro lens, I think, made it look...
It exposed it, for sure.
Yeah, it amplified what was there.
And the homeboy that was behind him.
Oh, yeah, really leaning back there. Yeah,
he was just so far forward with his shoulders.
Yeah.
Which made Josh look better,
that
honestly, mm-hmm. But still.
But then the guy on the right-hand side was, like, full...
Was legit, yeah.
Yeah.
He was legit.
I think his, like, everything was behind the bar. You know what I mean? Like, so, anyway, looking at regionals, man, these lists are getting, you know, we don't know exactly who's going yet, team, individual, whatnot. But looking at these lists of athletes, it just seems like it's getting harder and harder to qualify. Like it is getting to become, I don't know, it's almost an insurmountable mountain to climb.
If you think that's because you know more names? People are...
I feel like, yeah, it's almost the same names are showing up every year. You know, I mean, I know there's new people, there's new blood, there is, but it's few and far between. It's not like you're getting 20 brand new athletes every year.
Right.
Right? Like there's so many vets out there now. People have been doing it for so long, and it's just tough to catch people.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, the tide has risen overall, and the quality across the board is better as far as what people can lift, how fast they can move, the lack of weaknesses. And I think... But I think as far as it being harder to qualify by the numbers, you know, I'm not sure I agree. I feel like when you look at regionals last year and you look at the number of people that were in contention, like if you look at the point spread, I bet you it's about the same. It seems like over the course of the weekend, you have guys that separate themselves a fair bit. And then there's a few guys that are contending for those last couple spots. Last year in our region, Dan Bailey was separated from the jump, right? It seemed like John Para kind of separated himself quite a bit. Neil was up there pretty high. And then there was the next five guys, which included you, Bridges,
Melton Alcarez,
and maybe, I don't know if Wes Pyatt was up there or not.
Yeah, Wes was up there.
Somebody else was in that mix. And it was like, how are these workouts going to shake out?
Leverage. Yeah.
How are these workouts going to shake out? You know, who's going to go? And I feel like that's kind of the way it tends to unfold. Now, because we look at this list and we recognize names, I think what we do is we're like, oh, wow, there's a lot of good guys. But when you put them against each other, it's going to shake out the same.
Right.
Like, you know that you are going to be in the top five of any strength workout that shows up at regionals.
Sure.
Right. I know that I'm going to be in the top five or 10 of any chipper that shows up at regionals, just because relative to those guys, that's where our strengths lie. It's really more about, have you gotten your weakness in check, right? So that you don't take a huge number on any one workout.
Yeah, and I think if you look at that, I guess maybe in some sense you're right. If you look at that, why do you think that let me back up. I don't feel like there's as many people exploding onto the scene, right, nowadays because the sport is getting so difficult, right? Yeah. You don't have somebody just kind of crossing over from football or track and field, and then the first year they're just destroying it.
What about Frazier 2 years ago?
Right. Frazier.
He exploded on the
scene.
Yeah,
you got
right?
Frazier. You got a few guys that do that, but like it doesn't happen because the sport is more mature now, right?
Yeah.
Like there's a lot more gatekeepers, so to speak. So you might be really good and you might jump on the scene, but you might not get through the regional test, right?
I agree. I think I know what you mean. I totally agree with that. Like the minimum skill level is so high now, or it's to a point now that you can't just be a great athlete. Like you have to be a great CrossFitter,
Right. But you can't have to put your time in.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, to acquire the skills and the volume now that seems to be necessary. You can have people who walk in off the street and like, hey, show me a chest bar pull-up. And you show them like a butterfly chest bar pull-up. And they can just get up there and within 2-3 minutes, knocking out butterfly chest bar pull-ups. But can they do, you know, 100 in a workout? Can they then recover and return on the weekend and do 150 wall balls next? Can they then snatch? Can they then, you know what I mean, do all these other things?
Right.
So there's like that athlete, that freak of nature, doesn't just get to show up and kill it anymore.
Right. I agree, man, because I think when I think back to my first year at the Games in 2009, there was a very, very broad spectrum of body types and athletes there. The only constant was that everybody had a good motor. You know, that's kind of what CrossFit tested more than anything at that point. And now it's like you have to have a motor behind all this refined skill. It's like before it was a, you know, you wanted a Ferrari engine in like a, you know, a just a steel frame. It right. Doesn't really matter what that frame looked like as long as you had that Ferrari engine. Now it's like you got to have a Ferrari engine and like a
everything
body
else.
Kit.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be refined everywhere in order for you to really compete.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit on text message, but just that talent versus work ethic. Do you feel like that kind of shakes out a little bit in what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you talk to most athletes in most sports – they'll say that to be the greatest or to be at the very, very top, the elite level of a sport, you can't just be an amazing athlete or amazing talent, like genetic freak. You have to be that genetic freak and have an insane work ethic. Like Michael Jordan is the ultimate example of this, right?
Right.
The guy has got probably the best hops in the history of basketball.
Like, right.
Amazing speed, athleticism, reaction time, but was also the most competitive guy you've ever seen. So he worked so hard, endless hours. Like he built his craft over the course of his career. Like he turned himself into a great shooter, you know, all those things. And that's why he's the best basketball player that ever lived. You have guys that have comparable genetic potential to Michael Jordan that never saw it even close to realized to the level that he did.
Dude, probably all over the league, right? Like the whole, like almost the whole league is genetically as gifted as Michael Jordan, right? Almost.
Yeah, or close to it.
Yeah. Or at least a large majority. I shouldn't say the whole league, right? That's going to make me sound like an idiot, but
yeah.
I am. But, you know, but like there's a large majority of guys that can do what he does. Like he doesn't run twice as fast as everyone else. He doesn't jump twice as high as everyone else, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're right. In the same ballpark.
Right.
But he had just a different level of competitive drive and work ethic. And that's what really set him apart from his peers. I think it's – another great example is Jerry Rice, who did not have the crazy athletic potential,
no.
The genetic potential that many other guys had, like Randy Moss or Terrell Owens or, you know, any of these huge receivers that you've seen.
Those guys are freaks.
Right. And he just straight out worked them. He was just in better shape. He just ran better routes. All of that was practice. And he became the greatest receiver, like accomplishment-wise, in the history of the NFL because of his work ethic.
Dude, you're just like a sports almanac today. Just like just throwing out all the
great
sports
examples,
names.
Right?
Yeah. Great examples, yeah. I don't know. I look at that talent versus hard work, you know, kind of argument, and it's definitely there, I think, talent versus hard work at like lower level sports. But like at the highest level, like you were saying, you need to have both of those things, right? You need to walk in the door with some level of talent that puts you in the same class as these other athletes.
Right.
Right. But then you need to have a work ethic that is just different from everyone else.
What do you think? Because I'm trying to compare CrossFit, the sport that we talk about most, to some of these other more established sports where athleticism is kind of measured in like speed, reaction time, jumping ability, strength, whatever, explosivity. Like, what do you think talent looks like in a CrossFitter? Like you say, okay, this person needs a certain level of talent or genetic potential. Like, what does that look like in raw form for CrossFit?
That's a really good question. I don't really know exactly off the top of my head, but I think maybe genetic potential, like you said, might be a better term for CrossFit. You know, like, are they, do they naturally have, you know, this speed or this arm to torso ratio, you know, things like that. Like, I feel like
here's a better way to look at it.
Okay.
What in CrossFit can't be taught? Right? Because they talk about in basketball, you can't teach size, right? You can't, and like in football, you can't teach speed. They say you can teach speed. Really, what they can teach you how to do is run a 40-yard dash. They can't teach like real speed. They can teach you how to like beat a test, but not if you're born fast, you're born fast. You're born slow, you're slow, right?
Right.
You're tall, you're tall. Like, those things are raw genetic components that can't be worked on or taught, right?
Right.
And you need some of those to be in the same ballpark as a guy like Michael Jordan or a guy like Jerry Rice or whatever, and then your work ethic comes in and you build on top of that foundation. What are those foundational elements for a CrossFitter that you need to have, in your opinion?
Wow. That's a great question. I don't know what can't be taught in CrossFit. You know what I mean?
It seems to be so much dependent on the hard work part, right?
Yeah. It seems like it's all hard work.
Because it's training. is training.
Yeah. You know, where training typically has been what underlies and is the foundation for somebody to be able to use their talent at the highest level, right?
Right.
Like, you have the best hand-eye coordination, right? You have the best accuracy when throwing a football, you know? Well, you have the best accuracy, but if you don't have the base level of conditioning needed to play in the NFL, nobody's ever going to find that out.
Right.
Right? Where in our sport, your base level of fitness is really just the foundation for you to build on top of it more fitness, right? And then more fitness and then more fitness. So I feel like work capacity, you know, I don't know what talent or what genetic potential you would have to have in order to be good at work capacity. Maybe you need to have less talent at other things. And so that's what you really need to be, is you need to have a severe lack of talent in order to be good at CrossFit.
Yeah. But I don't think we can just say that anybody could be an elite CrossFitter, right?
Because
if it wasn't about the genetic potential, then you could say anybody that works really hard can go to the CrossFit games.
Right.
And I'm not sure that's the case. I don't think that's true.
Right.
I feel like there are some foundational elements, like, let's say, like lever length, right?
Mm-hmm.
That are maybe not, because there's always going to be an outlier, right? Like, you can have a guy like Muggsy Bogues make it to the NBA.
Right.
Or Spud Webb.
Yeah, but like you said, those are the outliers.
Those
for
are
sure.
outliers, right? So,
who possess like other genetic things to like 10 times.
To offset, exactly.
Right.
That are way overdeveloped. So I think you could say safely in CrossFit that it's an advantage to be shorter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You have an outlier like Spencer Hendel, who's been to the games.
Easy,
you
know, Muhammad.
Five or six times. Muhammad's a long, lanky guy.
Mm-hmm. And I think Easy's only like 6 foot. But he's not. He's like 6'4".
Right.
Right.
Asia Bartow, big,
exactly,
tall guy. Tommy,
yep,
Hackenbrook, big, tall guy. And there's, you know, there's guys that are outliers. But for the most part, your dominant male CrossFitters, guys that are making to the games, are like 5'7 to 5'10.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Typically with shorter levers, right? Shorter arms, shorter legs, so they can rep things out faster. So I think that's something you could say. Like, hey, genetically, if you're in this like size, you have a better chance of getting to the CrossFit games. And if it's not to say you can't do it, but it's a lot harder if you don't have that. Right?
Yeah.
What about, how would you say, if you were to compare, some people are just naturally strong.
Yeah.
Some people are naturally endurance-based, kind of based on their muscle fiber type. Like, where do you see that? If you're, like, evaluating somebody, you could give them, like, a scale from 1 to 10 on their strength and from 1 to 10 on their aerobic capacity. Like, what would you say is more important? Like, not at once they get to the games, but like walking in the door. Like, this is what I'm born with this. I'm born with a level 5 strength and a level 9 aerobic capacity, or vice versa. You know, what's more important genetically to have in your back pocket?
I would say if you have like that retarded motor, that's a really good thing to have. You know,
I would say the opposite.
I was going to say, I would say, I know you're going to say the opposite.
I would say the opposite.
But like, I'm really strong, and I've never been to the games. And I'm still strong even by game standards. I may not be top five at the games.
Right.
But I'm definitely not bottom five. Right? And I'm, like I said, I've never been to the games. You have been to the games. Right? And you've got a natural aerobic capacity and what a refined one as well, you know? But your strength is not... It's not even top five at regionals.
Oh, not even close. But it was back then. Right? The strength requirement back when I qualified for the games was lower.
Right.
You know? I would say the aerobic requirement is equivalent. Like, that hasn't gotten more difficult.
Yeah.
Right?
You still have a motor good enough for the CrossFit games. Your strength just is not there.
Right. The strength has just got... Like, the strength requirement has gone up. So, it's hard to compare... Like, right now, you take the 2011 version of me that took fifth at the CrossFit Games and put it in 2016 regionals, I wouldn't qualify.
It's the same thing, right? It's the same thing that's going to happen.
It's the same, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the test to get there now is so heavy that, you know, that kind of, it outweighs my aerobic thing. But I think what the question comes down to, if you compare strength and capacity from a genetic standpoint, right, it's like a muscle fiber deal, right? If you're more type 2, you can oxidate better. If you're more type 1, you're going to be more powerful.
Yeah.
What is more trainable is the question. Because whatever's more trainable means it's less important to have genetically. Right?
Yeah.
So if you can make a decision on, hey, I got to have the hard work. I know I got to have a work ethic here. Which of these things am I going to be able to improve the most?
Right.
The furthest? That becomes... the lesser important of the two to have genetically. And I totally would argue in favor of having strength genetically because I feel like you can build your motor.
I think when you put it like that, I'll probably agree, right? Like I feel like you can build a motor.
A lot better than you can build strength, right? It just takes longer.
Yeah. Like so there's some guys who beat their head against the wall trying to get stronger, right? And they just never get stronger.
Right.
For me, I don't know. Maybe I'm so... type 1 muscle fiber. Like I go out and I run. I come in, I back squat, and I PR. You right. know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like I just get stronger just by thinking about getting stronger.
Half our listeners just flipped you off, by the way.
I know, right? So I don't know. I think that it's... I think you might be right. But at the same time, you could lose your motor, but not really, though. I feel like your motor would always be better than mine, even if you just back squatted and did, like, strength cycles for, like, 6 months. And I ran for 6 months.
Yeah, I think...
Because your mile time right now is what?
Roughly. I could do it probably 5:30 or something like
5:30, that. 5:30, okay. 5:15, 5:30. What if you did not run or condition for 6 months?
Six minutes.
But you had to run a mile, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could probably still do a 6 minute mile. I would puke, but I think I could still do it.
Right. I could train for the next 6 months and I'm going to be probably like.
Right at that mark.
I might get there. You know what I mean? I might get to that 6 minute mark.
Yeah.
But I might still be able to get back under a 400 pound back squat and stand it up, you know, where
right.
you wouldn't be able to do that if you didn't do it for 6 months.
I think that's true. But I think that's not. I think that's strength in general. I think it's the harder thing to build, but it's also harder to lose. Like your body, because it's a nervous system adaptation, right?
Right.
Your body learns how to recruit all those muscle fibers, and it doesn't forget. You know, it may take you a couple sets to build back up to it, right? Mm-hmm. And like
right.
reactivate. But, you know, you see guys that are strong and then don't lift for like 10 years, and they still come in, and it's like, dude, you're still deadlifting like 400 pounds? Like what?
Yeah.
But you'd say, take someone it hasn't run for 10 years.
Yeah, they don't run the same.
Yeah, I just don't know. It just feels like, I think this is a bias thing. You and I are great to talk about this because we have opposite strengths and opposite weaknesses. So for me, it just seems impossible that, you know, being born with a motor is more valuable than being born with amazing strength. But for you, you can't imagine it the other way.
Yeah, people are like, oh, well, why don't you just train your motor and give away 20 pounds on all your lifts?
I gladly. You would gladly do that.
I do that. I train.
But you still just keep getting stronger.
I keep getting stronger. I'll do one lifting session, you know, a day, which is, seems to people a lot. Some people who train, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, that will sound like a lot. But when you're doing 5 or 6 workouts in a day, you know, 3 Metcons, 1 monostructural, and 1 strength training, like I'm literally doing 1 strength training workout a day.
Right.
And it doesn't consist of, you know, 10 by 10 back squat into, you know, banded deadlifts, you know what I mean? Like, and then weighted walking lunges. It was like snatch 6x2. And then move on, right? Go into gymnastics, go into running, go into this, you know. And before I even get to snatch 6x2, I'm doing like a 20-minute assault bike warm up. You know what I mean? It's like I'm just doing heavy breathing all the time,
right?
And my quads keep growing,
right? So and now and like, I think it's also you fall into a trap of talking about these things in black and white terms, like people are either all strength or all motor, right? When really everybody's a blend. And maybe what we should be talking about for the sake of this argument, this nature versus nurture, talent versus hard work, is it possible that the best guys in the CrossFit Games are genetically predisposed to have both, right? Or a kind of like a nice range of both. You take a guy like Rich Froning, obviously he's very strong. Obviously, he's got an incredible motor. Maybe genetically, he is born with both of those things.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that that's actually a pretty valid argument. I think that if there are ends of the spectrum, there has to be the middle of the spectrum, right? Like, it would seem that way.
At the top of the bell curve.
Yeah, exactly. And what's weird is if you look at it, that's where most people kind of lie, right? A lot of people don't have naturally the strength that I have. Right, they could work and train and do all the stuff they do, and they just don't have it. A lot of people don't have the motor you have, right? Most people are a blend of the two of us.
Most of the top games athletes.
No, like most people in the world. Like most okay. people in the world are okay. like a blend of the two of us, right? They have. What I mean by that is I don't mean that they're genetically predisposed to win the CrossFit Games. I just mean that they're not overly strong, right? And they're not overly motor biased,
right?
Right? They just happen to have just a normal blend of the two muscle fibers. They just then are just less trained than somebody like Rich Froning. You know what I mean?
Right.
That being said, they may have less of both types, and that's why, you know, they are what they are.
Right.
So I don't really know. It's a good question. And if, I don't know, if I could find some sort of like procedure to give me more of the different types of muscle fibers that need less oxygen or something.
Yeah, I mean, they say that they're obviously the effect of training on your anatomy has been tested and measured. And like there's a certain number of these type 1/2 muscle fibers that can go either way.
Okay.
And based on your training and what you ask of them, they go that way. So that's why you can have somebody who in one season could be, you know, a great marathoner. And then 6 months later, by doing different kind of training, could enter a powerlifting meet. You know, it's possible. And that's kind of what CrossFit tries to do is tries to walk that line of being the best of both worlds. And that's what we're all trying to do. But I don't know. The more we talk about this, it seems like everybody in CrossFit works really hard, right? Like everybody works really hard. So it's like if that's being held constant, is it just the people that have the best genes that are making it to the top?
I mean, it could be, or it could be, if you look at it, maybe it's not just the effort you're putting into your training, but maybe it's the effort you're putting into a specific type of program, right? So then maybe you have the programming issue starts to come into play, right? Like, am I following the right programming for me and for maybe my body type or my muscular structure, right? Like, is this the right program for me? And I think that's a good thing to kind of
look at. Yeah, I buy that. I buy some of that. I think that... Like, for example, I'll just use myself as an example. Like, I shy away from doing higher volume training in general just because I'm worried about the long-term effects of it.
Sure.
This last year, we've done higher volume, and I've been more motivated with our team, and I've been doing more stuff like you do, and it's worked. I feel like a general, more durable situation with my body. But there are people that train literally twice as much volume as I do. Like Margo trains an insane amount of volume. Kirsten Pedry, insane amount of volume. Anybody that's on the HyperFit program, like insane amount of volume.
Dan Bailey.
Insane. Right.
Rich Froning.
Rich Froning, right? Yeah. Like, what does Rich do? He's doing like, I've seen him. He does like three or four workouts, like just never stops, right? And Ben Smith, same thing. So it's like these people do unbelievable amounts of work, but it's like, what are they laying it on top of? Like, that is what makes the difference, right? Like, you talked about Margo. She does handstand pushups every day, right? Almost every day.
Yeah.
And is she ever going to get great at handstand pushups to like the elite level of handstand pushups?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Right.
Now, why is that? She's doing all the work. She's like the Jerry Rice of handstand pushups.
Right.
But it's not going to, I mean, all she's doing is trying to like limit a weakness.
Right.
Right. It's never going to be.
Yeah. So we know why she's doing it. We know that she's doing it to make up the difference in handstand pushup workouts.
Right.
But is she going to be the best handstand pushupper with all this training? No.
It's just not going to happen.
Right.
Because that's not what her genetics
are. Who's the best handstand pushup? Like a Camille or something like that?
Yeah. Probably Camille or Carl Webb.
Yeah. Like,
or somebody that's.
It doesn't matter how much you train, right? Like, you're not going to be better at handstand pushups than Camille unless you're Camille.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
Or a genetic freak at handstand pushups like that.
Yeah. So on that side of the argument, it's like, obviously you don't have any other recourse. You have to try. Right? You have to do the best you can to limit your weaknesses. But
well, it's like, why am I running now, right? Like, why am I running and doing tons and tons of burpees? Why am I texting you and asking you for a 3.5 mile aerobic capacity workout, right? Like, am I ever going to be a good runner? No. Not by the standards that we use as for good. Right, I'll be better than your people who are on the couch who are not trying to eliminate weaknesses, but I'm not going to be as good as your runners. You know, like Garrett Fisher can run. I know he runs really well as you. I'm not going to run. Bridges. I'm never going to run that well. You know, so I'm spending all this time training trying to eliminate a weakness, right? A deficiency.
Right, but it's never going to be.
But the foundation that I'm piling all this training on top of is not as good as the foundation as somebody. Who, somebody like I already mentioned, just like Margo's training is not going to be as good as somebody. It's not the foundation that she's laying all her training on top of is not as good as Camille. When I watch her do a handstand pushup, her elbows are not locked out, but they're like at the bottom. She's already above parallel to a point where it's like, man,
it's just
like,
easier.
It's a tricep extension,
right?
You know, and so it's not going to be the same. And that's not taking anything away from you as a runner, Camille as a handstand pushupper. It just makes me sleep better at night knowing that even though I'm doing all this training, I'm still never going to be as good as you guys are at running.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously there's no other – this is a training sport. It's built on how much can you improve. And I think you just need to – people – the reason why this discussion is fun to have is just it's just because it gives you an answer, right? It gives you an answer as to why it's so difficult for you to do some things and very easy for you to do others.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember I had a conversation with my college football coach. I was asking him about recruiting. Like, you know, I was like, I'm a junior. And I'm like, hey, who you come bringing in as a wide receiver? You know, like you can like bring some kid in to replace me or what? And I was like, you know, how do you go about recruiting? Like, how important is recruiting? You know, because like once you get him here, obviously you got to get kids into the system, learn the plays, get in good condition, good shape. And there's a lot of factors that go into putting a good football team on the field, right? Everybody's going to be on the same page. Got to call the right plays, all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, how does recruiting factor into it? He's like, Blair, it's the most important thing. It's more important than the plays we call. It's more important than how good a shape we're in. It's more important than our coaching staff. It's more important than everything because 9 times out of 10, the fastest horse wins the race. And that's what he said. And he totally believed it. And it's like, you can't win without talent. You hear it in the NBA all the time. It's like, it's a talent league. You can't outcoach talent. Sometimes you get it in college basketball where the talent levels are a little bit closer, but like you have to have a fast horse if you want to win a horse race. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And
doesn't matter how much time you put in practice.
Right.
At some point, you know,
there's
too many odds
goods
out there, right? There's too many factors, I feel like, at the CrossFit games and even at the regional level because you've went through the Open, and of course at the CrossFit Games because you go through 5 days of workouts, because you went through the regional weekend, because you went through the Open. Like, there's just too many factors, right, for the non-prepared, non-genetically gifted athlete to come out on top.
Right.
Right? Just like in a horse race, it's too long of a race. There's too many factors going on for the least genetically gifted horse to win.
Right.
Right? Like, oh, well, he's the most prepared. Good.
He has the best strategy.
He has the best strategy. Right?
Yeah, I know. It's not... I think that's a great way to look at it, because there's a reason why Rich kept winning.
Right.
There's a reason why Scott Panchik is in the top five every year. And it's not because he's got great strategy.
Like, right.
It's because at the end of a workout, when you're really tired and everybody is really tired and everybody's done a bunch of work, your body's just better.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You're just better.
Yep.
And no, it's not enough to just be better and lean on that. Like,
There's tons of people listening to this right now who just want to disagree with that statement in isolation. But the reality is, yes, you prepare. Yes, you execute on the day that you are supposed to. But what we're talking about is, like, outside of that, what are you preparing and executing with? What is your tool bag, right? Like, your body is your tool bag, right? And so you prepare and execute with a better tool bag, then you're going to win, right? You prepare and execute with a... poor, you know.
It's like just like training to be a sniper, and you have like a musket, you know, or you have a 50 caliber sniper rifle.
Like, well, I mean, I think even more so, it's like,
I don't care how much you practice with that musket, like, you're not going to beat the guy with the 50 caliber sniper rifle.
I mean, or eyesight.
If he practices,
how important is eyesight in being a sniper?
Very important,
right? Like, it doesn't matter how much you train if you can't see.
Right.
Right? Like, you have the best weapons out there. Right. You have the best programming out there. You can shoot the most rounds through your rifle out there.
Right.
And you will get better than everybody else who has poor eyesight.
Right.
And maybe even better than some people who have better eyesight who don't train.
Right.
But you're not going to get better than the people who have great eyesight and train all the time.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And that's kind of where we're at right now.
That's my drop the mic moment right there.
It's exactly right, because that's where we're at. Everybody is training hard.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, I don't know anybody who is like getting... is not putting the work in.
No.
You just look, it just seems like more and more and more. And which is great. It's great for the sport, because you get an honest champion.
Yeah, you do.
Every year. The best person is going to win, because it's not like they're getting tricked.
Right.
Getting like duped out of it. Like, oh man, like, I didn't know I was supposed to work out every day, or, you know, I didn't know I was supposed to practice all of my weaknesses. Like, everybody's doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Dave Castro's not going to interview the champion on the CrossFit Games floor this year, and they're going to be like, I really don't know how I got there. I don't know, Dave. I appreciate the check, but I'm not sure.
I really just started doing this a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Like, trying to work out hard.
Kind of off and on. Yeah. You know, I do an intramural basketball league, and then I work out and do CrossFit afterwards, and then I showed up here because I could sign up, and man, it was only $20 for the Open. I just rode the horse till, you know, and like, no, it's not going to happen that way.
That ship has sailed. Like, that's the way it was maybe 5 years ago.
Yep.
And that's just not how it is anymore. And the only way it would ever go back to that is if they changed the entire format of CrossFit, and like, all of a sudden you didn't have to do pull-ups and thrusters anymore. And it was some random stuff.
Right.
You know, that nobody could practice.
Every workout ended with like a one-arm handstand hold. You know,
yeah, or like a varying size rock carry,
yeah,
like with jumping jacks,
yeah, exactly, right?
Or just you had random stuff,
yeah, you had to do stuff with sleep deprivation, you know, like, it's just with the way it's set up now, athletes are prepared,
right,
like, they are prepared
and they're polished,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean,
like, you can't look at the CrossFit Games, like, you cannot look at the floor. I mean, especially when the women and the men in the individual side, when they walk out on the stadium floor on Friday night or on Sunday night, whatever, for the final, you can't look at them and go, that is, those people do not have better genetics than the rest of the world.
Right.
Like, you just look at them and you go, like, dang, like, I feel bad, like, just being me right now, because they are so, like, they're fit, like, they're good looking. They're, you know what I mean? Like, everything about them is like, dude, they're.
Dude, I have a great story about this. So in 2009, the third place finisher, this is like some good CrossFit trivia, was Mo Kelsey.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah,
firefighter from state of Washington, 6'2", kind of had like goofy runner shorts on. They were short. He's just, and he probably weighed 220 pounds.
Okay.
And fairly soft. Like,
okay.
Awesome guy. I love Mo. Probably one of the, my favorite guys that I met that year. He took third place at the CrossFit Games on the podium. And you, if you saw him like in a lineup of guys, you'd be like, yeah, you know, he works out. Man, he's fit. Kind of like, but like not shredded. You would not ever predict that he would be behind Mikko Salo and Tommy Hackenbrook on the podium at the CrossFit Games. There are no Mo Kelseys anymore.
There like, is
that
not
does
Mo
not
Kelsey.
Happen. Like it's gone. That has been weeded out. Like
right.
You can't, because I think Mo trains really hard, but he's probably just doesn't. He's not have. He doesn't have that same toolbox that Cole Sager has or that Noah Olsen has.
Right.
You know, or these, you know, Ben or Rich or Matt or Katrin or Sarah or any of the top athletes. They just, you know who does like the softest or like the least like visually obvious person at the games is Camille.
Right.
Camille still kind of looks like a normal girl.
Yeah.
Right. And I know people that.
And we say kinda, right?
Yeah. Cause she's still, yeah. She's still amazing and so strong and so fit, but like people look at her and be like, they relate to her because she doesn't look like the genetic freak that right. all the rest of the people do on the floor.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And they say it like in a complimentary way because
yeah.
it's gotten so, like you said, it's so obvious now that these are the literally top 0.1%
right.
of the population genetically when mm-hmm. it comes to fitness.
Right. It's so funny because I think you look at that and so that brings up another kind of point, and that's relatability, relatable,
right.
relatableness, you know, that the spectator has with the athlete, right? And I think that everybody kind of wants that. We love that story, whether it be in football, hearing about the guy who got drafted in the sixth round and then, you know, throws the football just so well. And then
Tom Brady.
Sudden, yep, and then ends up with, like, you know, four Super Bowl rings, you know, four, right? Something
yeah,
like that,
four.
You know, so it's just it's pretty incredible to hear those kinds of stories, like the average guy or the normal guy, right, who's really not normal.
No.
You know what I mean? But
appears normal,
right? So Camille, you know, beautiful girl, but she doesn't look, you know, super muscular.
And she's pretty small.
Yeah, she's not shredded, like she's not like walking around with veins popping out, and girls are like, maybe I should do CrossFit. I could look like her. You know what I mean? She's got great legs, she's got butt, she's not super, you know,
she's not bulky.
She looks like a dude.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you girls coming in here because of Camille, you know? And that's pretty cool. Another one we just mentioned her about handstand pushups, Margo. Margo looks very feminine. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to, she doesn't look super jacked.
Right.
You know? So you have these different body types, but I think the relatability is really, really good for the spectator.
Well, dude, talk about one that I see all the time. I mean, I'm not huge and jacked. I'm pretty lean, but in a t-shirt, like you don't know that. It's look like a normal guy. Cody Anderson, 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Dude looks like a high school, like, intramural style basketball player.
Yeah.
Like, and is out there just ripping off, you know, 18 unbroken muscle ups and squat cleaning 320 pounds. Like, doing incredible things in a package that you would not see it. But again, Camille, Cody, these are outliers. Right. And we said there's always going to be room in every sport for outliers where they kind of buck the rule. But that doesn't mean that
I saw Ben
the general
Smith at
trend.
HQ on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he in a t-shirt looks pretty normal.
Right.
You know,
well, that's he was in that category for a long time.
Yeah,
right?
He was.
And I mean, he still is among the more normal looking guys. I mean, from like a shredded perspective, but he's
right.
still, he's pretty jacked.
Yeah, he is.
His
he
back is huge.
I know, man. Maybe that's a problem. And we need bigger backs. I think a big back is important.
I could use a big back. That'd be great.
Important for CrossFit. Yeah. Like Dan Bailey.
Huge back. Just Ninja Turtle.
Ninja Turtle. Yeah. I really feel like he is a Ninja Turtle. Anyway, I just go into Dan Bailey. He's just like one of the coolest and funniest guys around, you know? And see when he gets all crazy doing his Danny Broflex stuff. It's just
is
awesome.
Is he still doing that?
Yeah, man. They just recorded another one. Like I said, I'm just dropping this HQ thing over and over again. But when I was there, they were doing another Danny Broflex video and editing that and putting it together. And maybe I saw the outfit. I didn't get to watch the footage. Like they asked anybody who wasn't part of the actual media
right.
group doing it. They said, hey, if you guys could just get out of here for a little while. So we got out of the room, but I saw the shorts. I'm not sure how he got them on. but man, just big back is what we're getting to. You know, these guys right. got a big back.
I don't know. Just kind of like wrap this up with a bow on it. Do you think that, I mean, it seems like we kind of agree that if you're choosing between having an amazing work ethic and amazing genetics, you can't really choose one or the other, right?
Not at that level, right? Not at the CrossFit Games level. It's not right. going to happen. Not even at the regional level.
Right.
Yeah.
Do we think that, that message is good for CrossFit in general?
I think...
Because I kind of feel like the message that they'd want to have, or we'd want everybody to know, is that it doesn't matter what your toolbox is, what your genetics are. Like, it's all about hard work. Because that seems more motivating, right? You even said with people that look a certain way and the audience can relate to them, that's more motivating.
Well, let me just say this, right? So if we're wrapping this up and if I want to leave our listeners with something that they really should think about is – you don't know what type of foundation you have, really, right? Like, unless you've been training. So, like,
you can't just go to the doctor and get a test and say, you could be this great.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? That's not me, right? Like, if that's not you in your head, then it definitely isn't you because you're never going to actualize your potential anyway, right? But genetically speaking, like, you may not be, you know, the average guy who walks into my gym. You know, you won't know if you're a Tariq. You know, until you actually come in here and you actually train and see, like, what am I capable of? So if you've never tried CrossFit before, if you've never tried really pushing yourself, like, get in the gym and try. And then you might go, holy crap. I was Rich Froning, but I had 30 pounds on me. I lost this 30 pounds and all of a sudden I'm killing it.
That's a good point, man. You really, there's no way for you to know what you are capable of. So everybody needs to just assume that they're capable of, you know, anything.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that goes, I mean, honestly, for a lot of stuff. You might have a marriage right now that's kind of like, meh, so-so. And you're like, this is kind of who I am, man. I'm just not very good at being a husband, you know? It's like, dude, have you really tried? You know what I mean? Like, have you,
right.
do you go out to dinner with your wife on a regular basis? Do you buy her flowers occasionally? You know, do you tell her nice things? Well, I've never really tried that. Well, it's like, bro, you don't really know if you could be a good husband. You're putting this limiter on yourself.
Do you feel like that? I mean, we've kind of like chalked up the work ethic thing to training, right?
And yeah,
do you think some of that is nature as well? Some people are born with a like psychological predisposition to hard work, or do you think it's all learned? Because I know when I see people come into the gym, there are people that I have to really push, and then people that I don't.
I think it is just God given sometimes. But I think it also can be learned, right? So you have people who are just, they're just wired that way, man. They love to work. They love to get in there and grind. And they'll just sit down and, man, when it comes to working, they've got no problem. And you have some people who are reluctant, but they push through it for so long that pretty soon, man, you can't tell the difference between them and somebody else who's been a hard worker their whole life.
Right. I have witnessed one person that I can say concretely, without a doubt, was born with the ability to work hard and enjoy it. And everybody else, I'm suspicious. I think it's learned. I think they learned it over the course of failure, right? Having a chip on their shoulder at a young age, maybe. Like, they weren't good enough at something, and that motivated them to be better.
Yep.
Or I know for me, like, I was always small. And so, like, trying to play sports, I had to work hard in the weight room. I had to, like, I really just had to do that stuff. Otherwise, I wasn't going to make the team, right? So that, like, developed a work ethic at that age. And I kind of believe that anybody can be taught to work hard if it's done early enough. I think it's a really hard thing to learn late in life.
Sure.
You know, it's like they say, learn your study habits in high school because you're not going to learn them in college.
Right.
I feel like it's kind of the same way, man. Like, there's a tipping point that either you get to a certain age or a certain amount of mileage kind of behind you in your rear view of habits. It's really hard to teach somebody how to work hard past a certain point.
Yeah. I think we...
That one person, by the way, Kalipa.
Kalipa, yeah.
I just believe in my heart that dude was born to like and just loves hard work and loves like the pain of physical toil. You know?
Yep.
And I don't think he learned that. I think it's there. I think it's just in his head since he was born.
Dude.
Because I've never seen anybody like legitimately that I really believed likes the way CrossFit feels.
Right.
Like Rich, Dan, any you name it. I'm like, nah. Like they hurt and they don't like it. Like they're mentally overcoming this right now.
Right.
Whereas Jason is like, this is where he wants to be.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think Jason is one of those guys. I can think of a few guys throughout my, you know, my life that I've run into that I feel like genuinely are born to work really hard.
Right.
But I agree with you. I think that it's learned. I mean, for most of us, you know what I mean? Like, that's just what it's going to be, you know? And it's funny because when I need motivation, there's a couple guys that I will go to for that. And Jason is one of them. I actually went to him this morning. And nice. Another one is Paul Gomez from Progenics.
Right.
And I feel like Paul, dude, you can't get him to slow down. You know what I mean? Like, some people just... They only see Progenics, the brand, but they don't see the engine kind of behind it.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who Paul has around him. His team is so strong. Like, you don't meet anybody from Progenics and you're like, that's not a good dude.
Right. That's
kind of
true.
Kind of sketchy, right? Like, he's building a team that works as hard as he does, right? And then he tries to outwork them, I feel like, is kind of like what he does. I mean, at Wadapalooza, we saw the guy who's climbing up on the...
In the rain.
Like, I'm like, hey, Paul, I can do that for you. No problem. You know, it's like, you can just tell me what you need
done. No, I love
it,
man.
And he's like, nope, just hand me this right there. You know, hand me a pair of pliers. I'm like, okay. You know what I mean? And so you look to people like that and you go like, oh man, how do I learn how to work that hard? Because maybe part of what they have is genetic. And then on top of that, they also know it's a good thing. So they've kind of reinforced it by like literally doing more work than anybody.
Right.
Like, and even when they probably don't want to. Like, you know, there's still times where Jason, Paul, and those different people. Like, I'm thinking, there's another guy I know, his name's David Miller. He'll never listen to this podcast.
Right.
But, like, he's a guy, and this guy is irritating. But he's also one of my friends. But he is irritating, but he works really hard. And it's just like, but they also see the value in hard work. And so they force themselves to do it when nobody else wants to.
Right. And some of that comes down to habit, right? They've been doing it so long, it's like, this is just who I am.
Yeah.
And that's the level that you want everybody in your gym to get to. It's like, this is not a battle for me to show up and work hard anymore. It's just who I am.
No. Yeah.
You know? And so to a certain degree, you know, you're building a habit, right? Mm-hmm. You're building an identity with your training.
Yeah.
If you're an athlete, you know that you have to work as hard as everybody else. And that's like the prerequisite. And you don't know what your genetic potential is, but you know that the one controllable thing is how much time you put in. And then let's just see where that puts you. You know, it has to be a habit.
That's it. And I mean, I would leave our listeners with this. If you have had any success in fitness, let's say you can run a sub-6 mile. Okay. Let's say you can do 15 or 20 unbroken pull-ups, or you can snatch your body weight or more. Like, if you can do those things by putting in time in your fitness, then think about what you can do if you put time in the other areas of your life. Like, that's how much I want crossover from my CrossFit. You know what I mean? Like, I want people to be able to see, like, hey, you put in time here, you learn these behaviors here, and look, you can see it because you get to add more weight on the bar. Well, literally, if you're struggling financially or
right
business, that's the same, right? Or education or emotionally or maritally, right? Like, you can just look at that and go, oh, I put these habits in place in my fitness and I got success. What happens if I look at my weaknesses in those areas and start applying work ethic in those? And all of a sudden, you get better at those. So,
yeah, dude, that's great. Great advice.
There you have it. All right, guys. So make sure you guys go to our website. Check it out. Not a lot of new content there yet, but with the games coming up and all these different things, you guys look for that. Also, follow us on Instagram, BTB Podcast. Check out Blair's Instagram. You can see a lot of pictures of his new baby.
That's right.
She's going to have a lot of firsts, a lot of PRs coming up here pretty soon.
That's true.
She's getting older, man. She's going to start moving around. So,
crawling,
you know.
Crawling and walking and talking.
Oh, walking. Walking PR coming up soon. Crawling PR coming up pretty soon. So check those out. And then as for me, you can follow me if you want to.
Armal Ben.
I'm just running a lot. All right, guys.